Hello, this is Phyllis Verumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. We're on a roll here with the precepts, and today is Earn Your Living Honestly. This has been a great question. What does this mean? What if I avoid my taxes? Is this earning my living honestly? What does this really mean? And as a concept in Japan, sometimes it takes on a totally different aura than what we in the United States or perhaps in the Western world might think of it. I have with me today Jerry Jackson. She's from the Tampa Bay, Florida area. And if you hear an Irish lilt in her voice, it's because she is, I assume originally, from Ireland. The old country, as I would say.
Correct.
And Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Phyllis. And yeah, you're right. It's called the old sod, actually.
Oh, the old sod.
The old sod. Uh-huh. The old sod. Uh-huh. I'm very blessed and grateful that you've invited me to share one of the precepts and earn your living honestly. I was rather surprised, actually, that you asked me to speak on that, because I really hadn't given it much thought. And yet, as soon as you said it, it was like, wow, what does this really mean? And the very...
Yeah, so I'm going to interrupt you for a moment.
Sure.
Because I'd like to start at the beginning. I have this kind of ritual in my radio show, and I appreciate that you had great insights the moment you put your mind to it. I thought you might. And and it's so I think that just to set the stage a little bit, I would like for the listeners to know how you came to Reiki and how Reiki brought you, perhaps Reiki or something else, brought you to the United States from Ireland. Because, you know, Reiki in Ireland, I've been there a couple of times, and there's a wonderful feeling about Reiki in Ireland. Anyway, the groups that I met, because I feel like there is a special quality of Ireland that a lot of us, perhaps you're sick of it, but a lot of us associate with kind of magic, a kind of the word that I would use in English is a little bit of fae, so a little bit of intuition, otherworldly, leprechaunish kind of energy. And it's really sweet, because I feel like that's also a very integral part of what Reiki brings to us, the mystical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very definitely.
Yeah? So how did you meet Reiki?
Interestingly enough, at that time I was living in America. I was in the Pacific Northwest, and I co-founded an international homestay program for Japanese students.
Wow.
And I'm very blessed. The program is still running. And what occurred in that entire process was I was driven to secure another degree. And because it was in the 80s, international business came to mind. So I left the education piece and went into international business. And one of the requirements was to declare a language. Well, I had like 16 years of Latin. And because I was an opera theater major in music and education, I had to study Italian and German, and I had 6 years of French. And so I said, I don't want any of those anymore. So I clipped the book, held out the language section, and just thumbed through, you know, flipped the pages, and opened the book, closed my eyes, went down the line, and said, this is what I'm taking. And it turned out to be Japanese.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then... with the piece of the International Homestay Program, I became totally attached, interested, drawn to the Japanese culture, just because of the students and the chaperones.
Uh-huh.
And having students live with me and trying to match the families to the students and that whole interest piece and personality. And so I actually was on a personal quest to seek Japan myself.
Oh.
And, of course, as a Caucasian, in Japan in the mid-80s, that and a woman alone, that was kind of a very unique piece also.
Very unique, very unique.
And I was not 100% fluent in Japanese, but I could manage in small conversation. And the piece that's most intriguing to me is I knew I was going to Japan. I had no idea of how, when, where, or anything, but I just knew it was there. And I was a single mom at the time. I had just been advised I was finally in remission from a bout of leukemia. I lived out in the country. I lived a piece off the land, you know, kind of thing. And I had one son at home. And it was, how am I ever going to do this, you know? And one night, I woke up very awake, alert, and it was go to the dining room table, open up your Japanese map. I went to the dining room table, opened my Japanese map, and it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, everywhere I was going to go in the order I was going. It was amazing, absolutely. Where that came from, I haven't any idea.
Wonderful.
And it was fascinating because I ended up going to a place that when the Japanese heard I was going there, it was like, we haven't even been there. I went to the Wakayama Mountains and spent time in Koyasan. And it is there Reiki found me.
Ooh.
I actually stayed in a temple with monks, which was another interesting piece because they insisted I was a man before I arrived.
Oh, because of your name.
And so I kept saying, no, it's Mrs. And they said, no, Mr. So that was kind of an interesting piece. And they didn't realize I was a woman until I rang the bell outside. And their eyes got big. They looked at me. And it was like, oh, you know, what do we do next? So that was a very interesting scenario. And everyone on the tram, because a tram actually goes up the side of a mountain to get up to Koyasan, and they were thinking I was not interpreting the Japanese correctly, even though I was responding. They thought I was just going up for the day. And I said, no, I'm going to be up here for a few weeks. And they said, are you sure? And I said, yes, I am sure. I'm going to be up here for a few weeks. And in that time, the monks became aware that I honored their space and I honored their ritual. And of course, it took a few days, and eventually it was a progression, because at first I had to stay outside the temple completely. Then, in about 3 or 4 days, I was allowed into another step.
Right.
And then, in another few days, I was. So, by the time I ended, coming close to my end of my trip with them, I was allowed actually in the inner portion of their temple, sacred space.
Beautiful.
And these monks treated each other, as we know of Reiki, which was kind of very interesting to me. And they could see me stretching, trying to see what they were doing. And so then my night before I was to leave, they actually came to me and invited me in and asked if I would like to be treated.
Wow.
And that's exactly my response, Phyllis. I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, because they do remember the piece that I would go on the walk and spend time on the Mount Onankoyasan itself and just sit for hours. You know, so they understood that I understood the quiet and the internal search, and that the journey inward is the most difficult one of all. And I think they sensed the peace that I was on a personal quest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very blessed. And from that time on, I can truly say I was never the same.
I can imagine.
And I can't express how, but I can still hold that moment of treatment. I can still feel it. And I can still see the monks. It was an unexplainable dynamic that occurred. And interesting from there, I had no idea of what it was, where it was, how it was, you know, how it was really going to affect me. And many years later, in my journeying in life, I managed to find my way back to Ireland via the South Pacific and Australia and the Marshall Islands and living in Guam. And it was just, yeah. And I found my way back to Ireland. And 20 years after my treatment came this advertisement in the Galway Advertiser from Regina Mahoney, who is an Irish master. And I saw this advertisement, and I go, why is this so familiar? And I said, oh, bother, you know, put it aside. It's in Galway City, and that's about an hour and a half to 2 hours from where I was. A jaunt on a country coast road, and I said, I'm not interested in that. Put it aside. Then a few weeks later, the advert jumped out of the paper at me again, and I said, maybe, yeah, well, something distracted me, and I put it aside. A few months later, the advert jumped out of the paper again, and I said, I've got to call this woman, because it isn't something that I don't know the term, but it's very familiar. So Regina and I chatted a good bit on the phone, and she said, well, just come. I'm doing an introduction, and you can get your feel and see if it fits, and come. So I went to the hotel where the venue was, and no one was in the room, right? And now, this is amazing to me. No one was in the room. The chairs were set up in a circle, and yet there was an honoring altar of Dr. Yasui, Dr. Chihiro Hayashi, Mrs. Takata, and yourself, Phyllis.
Yeah.
I looked at this, and I just stood in the room, no one there, and I honestly said, oh my God, this is so familiar. And I knew no one in the group. I hadn't even met Regina yet. I've only chatted with her on the phone. And it was like this energy just took me in. I had not even heard the introduction. I hadn't read any more about it. I hadn't even met Regina. I didn't meet their coordinator. And I just said, And there I sat, waiting for everyone else to arrive. And Regina goes around the room, and of course she knows everyone. And she looked at me, and I said, oh, I'm Jerry Jackson. And she said, oh, welcome, how are you? And we chatted, you know. And she gave her intro. And that was at the time of discernment, whether people were staying or not staying.
Right.
There was a fluidity in that. And so Regina looked at me, and I said yes. I mean, I knew yes before we even started. And from there, I knew that I was going to take second degree. I knew before even first degree was over, I was going to second degree. While I was in second degree, I knew I was going on to mastery. It was just been an amazing process. And that treatment in the Wakayama Mountains on Koyasan still comes back.
Amazing.
It still comes back. And so my presence with Reiki is that Reiki found me, but it took me an evolutionary process to come to acknowledge Reiki.
Wow, beautiful story.
So it's Reiki holds a very unique piece to me and for me, and interestingly enough, the mysticalness and magicalness of Ireland, I think, too, aided in my processing and being more present with Reiki and my coming into a more deepening space with my Christian concept. I'm a Christian, I'm a Catholic by faith and practice. And it's enabled me to integrate both my personal spiritual practice of my Christian side and also my spiritual practice of Reiki.
So beautiful.
It's lovely for
beautiful.
Myself.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That, to hold that.
And just because I think there are a lot of questions about religion and Reiki sometimes, or I would say in some people, how do you find that integrating in yourself? Do you have any difficulty at all? It doesn't seem like it, but I thought I'd ask.
No, actually, Reiki has been a tool, a practice for myself that has enabled me to become more spiritually centered in my relationship with God, in my spirituality, in my meditation. Also, the precepts in Reiki have a great parallel to many of the Christian spirituality, conceptual texts, scriptural texts of many religions, not just in the Christian realm.
Right, that's true.
There's a total, just a total commonality in the precepts, principles themselves that enable those of us who have another spiritual practice to integrate that and deepen our own spirituality and our practice. It enables us, or those of us who are not able to center automatically, to come to that peaceful space, and enables us to get the distractions of the world away from us, to enable us to connect better in our meditation and our conversation with our God, you know, our higher power, you know, whatever our spirituality happens to be. So from my Christian's perspective, there is no contradiction, there is no challenge. It's just a marriage, you know, a partnership, you know, that occurs. And an evolving that the two of them dance very well together.
Right. Well, that's beautiful, Jerry. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
And this, for me, is a great segue into Earn Your Living Honestly, because I think as a Reiki master and being a devout religious person, that it would be very important for you to be able to hold both of these without defensiveness, without inner conflict within yourself. And for me, this is part of the concept of Earn Your Living Honestly. So I appreciate your sharing. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. So as we go through the precepts, just for today, do not worry. Just for today, do not anger. Honor your parents, teachers, and elders. Then there's this Earn Your Living Honestly, which takes people aback sometimes, and then show gratitude to every living thing. So as we move through these, Earn Your Living Honestly sometimes is the one precept or principle that people find as a little bit of a stumbling block. Like the concept is, you know, of course we're supposed to be honest, which means that we're supposed to keep a kind of business integrity. But it goes much deeper than that, and I'm sure that, I hope anyway, I'm sure that you're able to articulate some of that for yourself.
I really was intrigued by your asking me to do this piece of the precepts, because as I stated earlier, I was not, I never had a consciousness of it, but as soon as you said it, the thought came to me that earn your living honestly. First, I think one needs to decide, and I came to this myself. I had to make the decision. Am I living to work or working to live? So I think that with that presence and with that consciousness, that awareness of why am I working in the first place? Working to live or living to work is important. Because if one is living to work, there may be a difficulty in the honesty piece.
Because
if you are living to work, you may be compromising yourself. And in compromising yourself, you're compromising your own honesty to yourself. You are not able to really live the precepts. Because in, you know, living to work, work is totally your focus.
So that's your priority.
Yeah, it is.
No matter what.
Exactly.
Ah, I get it.
Okay? You cannot not worry.
Right.
You know, you cannot not get angry. Because if you're living to solely work, you may be in a work environment that you totally hate. But the paycheck is great. You know? And you may not enjoy that dynamic.
Right.
So, you know, there was a whole thing that came for me with that, as opposed to working to live.
Okay.
You know, so you are working to supply what you need. What you need may not be totally what you want.
Right.
There's another, you know, another deep conversation about need and want, but the point is that you have this deeper space of being wholly honest. You're being honest with yourself. Most often you're in a position that you really enjoy, that you really like. You're able to follow the precepts in their entirety more fully, and you're able not to anger, you're able not to worry, because you're in the want space. I mean, not the want, you're in, you know, what I need rather than what I want. You're honoring your parents by not, you know, constantly being out there, and, you know, you're exemplifying the flow of life. And honoring your parents come into play with this, and your elders, and as a Reiki master, I'm honoring my master and the spiritual lineage of Reiki, and honoring yourself by living in a way that I can be wholly honest with myself, my God, my world, my students, rather than constantly being in a work environment that is distasteful, I'm there only for the money, you know, that piece. And as we are in this space of contentment, I'll say, and acceptance, contentment and acceptance, things flow and you don't have the resistance of the universe against you, so to speak. And things come. There's a positive energetic that occurs that enables us to have what we need. And then some, most often.
So I follow your line of reasoning, and what I would love, if you have a story, is to of your own personal journey that might fit this. So do you have a little story that you could tell from your own personal experience of this?
I can. It's not... actually, it is Reiki-related. I almost said it's not Reiki-related, but it really is. I had a time in my life when I worked for a large American airline company. And I had, because of their reorganization and their restructure, I was very happy living where I lived at the time. And in order for me to stay financially secure and hold the supervisory position that I held, I was required to move. And it was, oh, sure, you can stay where you're at, but you take a downgrade, you'll go to part-time. You know, if you go to part-time, you lose your benefits, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. And I just, well, I can't do that. You know, I can't compromise and jeopardize my lifestyle kind of thing and my comfort and what I like to do and my ability to play golf whenever I feel like, wherever I feel, you know, or my ability to, you know, catch a plane and have lunch in Paris or something. You know, I can't do that. So I said, oh, sure, you know, I'll pack up and move. Well, then I had to go through that close to cathartic process of, oh, my God, what did I commit myself to doing because of the job?
Right.
Because of the job. And I said, well, and I wrote it down. I said, okay, well, yeah, it guarantees me money. I actually will get a promotion. I'll maintain my flight benefits. I'll do this, da-da-da-da. And I transferred across. I'm 3,000 miles away. And when I got there, it was like, oh, my God, what did I let myself into here? I ended up sharing a flat with four other women who were young enough to be my children, which was a very unique experience. We had one bathroom, and that, too, was an interesting experience. And where we were located, it was not sensible to have a car. So mobility and transportation was an issue. Accessibility was an issue. But I had my job.
Right.
I had my paycheck. The problem was, how do I get from point A to point B?
Right, right.
How do I cope with living with four other women who were young enough to be my children, who also obviously had a very different concept of life, living, and sexuality than I did. And so that too was an impasse because, of course, they had romancing going on and all of that, and I was past that stage. So that was a challenge when you came into the room that you shared with three other women and you find other people there.
Yes.
So that was a very interesting, but I had my job.
Right.
I had my security. I had my paycheck. I had my flight benefits, you know. If I wanted to go to Frankfurt next weekend, I could do that, you know, kind of thing. And then as things progressed, at that time I was still single, and I met, in the process of things, the goodness of this, I met my husband, my partner of present. And so that's the goodness of that peace, that horrific time. But then, in order to stay employed, again, because of the internal reorganization of this airline, we need to tell you, you need to move. Either you move again, or everything. And I'm going, God, I've only been here now a year and a half. What is this, you know? And so then it came to the presence of, this is ridiculous, you know? There is this piece, and my husband and I had this challenge, because in my moving, that meant he was somewhere, I was somewhere else.
Right.
The challenge there was, he held the space, and I held the space. For him, there was life before Jerry, And for me, there was life before Jonathan.
Uh-huh.
So we had to honor that space also. And he would say, well, if you really feel this is right for you and it's an identity thing and da-da-da, go for it. And I go, I just don't know because it affects our relationship, that whole thing. So we did it anyway because we went back to that piece, life before Jonathan, life before Jerry, go for your career, da-da. So I went, and again, I had the job. I had a lovely townhome. I mean, that piece was good. I finally could own a car. I was able to be mobile, go where I wanted to go. I still had the flight benefits. Then came the piece of my husband is 1,800 miles away, and I'm here, he's there. Yes, we could fly to see each other, but I can tell you that gets old after a while.
Right, I can imagine.
So then we went through this whole thing. Why are we married?
Right.
You know, why did we do this? This is ridiculous. So the two of us came to the place where we were needing to be. We were needing to be what we vowed we were going to be.
Uh-huh.
So each of us, he had a very prestigious position within the space shuttle program itself. And so in our concluding that piece, we both came to the presence that let's go out there and see, let's circulate our CVs, resumes, and see what happens. So he came into a contractor role position where it was called accompanied. That means your partner could go with you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how would you feel about living in the South Pacific? And I said, oh, that sounds wonderful. You know, let's try that on. So each of us, after very deep prayerful consideration, walked away from our careers. And gave notice. And because I was just 6 months short of my vested time with this airline, we actually thought about his going on first.
Uh-huh.
And finally I said, no. You know, we said we were going to do this. I will cut. And when I did that, it was amazing because I had put out contacts to my manager, because at that time I was a supervisor, put out contact to my manager, their managers, that, you know, Jerry Jackson is giving notice. My last day is such and such. I need to see you. And I was ignored, and I was ignored, and I was ignored. And it was quite an amazing piece for me. I finally had to sit down at my computer and email people.
Mm-hmm.
And I emailed everyone at once and said, this is my last day. The day I did that, I heard from everyone. But up until I did that, nobody honored my need to see them. But the moment, I'll never forget, I was sitting at my computer. And the moment I did that, it was like, whew, you know, this freedom, this realization that I have been led, my direction had been geared, not by my own desire, not by my spirituality, but by this company that I wanted to hold on to, allowing them to control my life in because I needed the paycheck. I felt secure with that paycheck. But the moment I let go of that piece, it was like this flood of calm, refreshment came over me, and everyone around me was like, wow, what happened to you? It was like something actually transformed my appearance, and those around me noticed that.
Oh, I can imagine.
Noticed that vitality, that energy. And I said, I just gave notice, and I feel great. And like I said, the management then took stock that she was serious about this. This just was not a whim. And then my husband and I came together. We not only came together, but we were on an island in the Pacific that was 2 miles long and a half a mile wide.
Oh my gosh.
With a few thousand other people, was a very functioning total environment with school systems, hospitals,
wow,
airports. It was quite amazing. It was such an amazing process, and it was amazing to fly over the islands and for the pilot to say, we are now right over the island that all of you are getting off the plane for and will be living on. Some people became polarized and they could actually not get off the plane because the island is so small. They could not envision themselves living in this 2 mile by a half a mile space for a minimum of 2 years.
Wow.
They could not. And they did. They just stayed in their seat and said, I'm not getting off. But they had to get off, show their papers, and, you know, say on them, I am not, I can't take this contract, and come back on the plane.
So
that was very interesting. And then for myself to come to the place of service, because it was in that piece that I really found my contentment in the presence of, we are here to serve. Even though I knew that, I finally was able to live it. And on that island, I was very blessed, and I got what was called an off-island contract because I was not contracted abroad, and I was the accompanier. I was accompanying my husband. And in that piece, I was very blessed because I managed to go back to my educational piece and integrate what I had learned and be responsible for the cultural awareness of the non-island folks that were coming on the island to work. And I became very involved in the Marshallese culture and learned the language of the Marshalls and did a cultural awareness piece for the Marshalls.
Wow,
so
wonderful.
I was responsible for the cultural awareness programs on both sides, as well as the English as a second language piece, the customer service piece, because without the local islanders, we would not have been a functioning island.
Right, right.
And they were having great difficulty in dealing with the Westerners.
Right.
Because we were not just American, we were Irish, there were some Swiss, there were Germans, there were Brits. And so there was a real potpourri of Caucasian culture.
Right.
There, and as well as, because we were in the islands, a real potpourri mix of cultures.
Right, right.
So it was a wonderful, wonderful, enriching living piece for me, even though I was not driven by the job. I was driven by the spirit.
Well, that's a great story for an example. And I just reminds me of some of the things that happened in my Reiki classes, especially in the beginning, because I spent more time talking to my students and being more social. Now I don't do that so much anymore. In my first degree classes, anyway, where people would say, you know, I'm an attorney, but since I've taken first degree, I don't want to do this anymore. I realize how discontented I am and how it doesn't really serve me. And, you know, in my generation, I'm 60 now, when we all went to school back in the 1970s, late 60s and 70s, being an attorney was one of the jobs to have because, you know, and women, for women especially, because it was one of the in the United States, it was one of the professions that actually was really open to women. And there were a lot of specific specialties in law which were really geared toward women. And there were a lot of women that did take a law degree. But, you know, when they started to take Reiki, they just got that this was absolutely not what they wanted to do. So some of them became creative and turned that education into something that really served them as you said, rather than working for the job or working for the that education. And some of them quit altogether and went back to school to become therapists or who knows what. And I found that quite amazing that people could just give up what you call your security. Me, I had kind of frittered around in my own career, we could say, and my career, so to speak, found me, which was Reiki. And I ended up, I would say, as much as possible, floating around with spirit. But I realized in your story that there were moments when I also had to ask myself, like, what is your motivation for doing this work? And how do you care for yourself? And so I've gotten better and better at it. And now, of course, I have even more impetus to take care of myself. But it's like asking the right question is a part of this piece about earn your living honestly. Mm-hmm. And asking yourself, what is my motivation? What do I get out of it? And is this really what feeds my soul? So I have a question for you about going back to your very interesting life connected with the Japanese culture. And I'm wondering, have you ever had any thought about, because this practice did come from Japan, and we can say, well, the Japanese culture doesn't really matter so much anymore because I'm German or I'm Swiss or I'm Chinese or I'm Australian or whatever. But there is some flavor of the culture that comes through. And one of the wonderful things about the culture is that it's very conceptual. So I'm wondering, in your contact with the Japanese culture, can you relate this precept, earn your living honestly, to something that you saw in Japan or that you met in Japan and influenced you?
You know, I really can. Several experiences just popped into my mind.
Oh, wonderful.
As you were asking that question.
Oh.
The gratitude and humility of the Japanese culture at large, the kindness and generosity, even with the money exchange piece, if you gave the wrong amount, they always gave you the proper change.
Right.
There was never a question. And even if in our Western way we would say, oh no, just take it, it would be, oh no, you know, they would, you know, say, oh, thank you, but then they would give it back to you.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it was, and for a bit of a time it was hard for me, especially when I was up in Koyasan with the monks, because you know, I would give them something as a donation in gratitude. And then it would be in an envelope, which was interesting. I put it, for some reason, I put it in an envelope.
But that's very Japanese, okay. Somehow. It's very Japanese. I don't know why.
I
don't know what the background is.
I don't know where I got that, but
right.
It just felt right.
Right.
You know, so
right.
I put it in an envelope. And I did know the piece about turning your card, your business card, over.
Right.
And, yeah, so I knew that piece. So I was passing this envelope with my business card upside down, and I passed it to them. And it's interesting, the passing, because it's not two-handed open. It's, you know, when I was there, it was hands on top of hands kind
right.
of thing. It was, yeah, being held, that caring, that almost nurturing and loving energy,
uh-huh.
You know, that when you're passing something, it isn't the two hands like
right.
we often do. And when I passed it to this monk, he asked me to wait, and I waited. And, you know, he was most gracious, bowed to the ground, you know, that whole piece. And then a few minutes later came back and passed me back an envelope. And
uh-huh.
I thought, well, what is this? You know, and I just said, thank you very much. And I held it because I also came to know that it was not right to rip open something in front of of them.
Right.
And so I went away with this envelope, really wanting to open it right in front of this monk. I had to really contain myself. And I went, whoa, what is this? You know, he gave me back what I had given them.
Yes.
And that whole piece of, you know, we, you know, you're being generous, we're being generous. You know, you have a need for this. We can see that you have a need for this. You know, your journey is not finished. And that the whole concept in Japan of gratitude, humility, graciousness is, you know, was my experience in Japan, has been my experience with the Japanese culture. And that piece of the Japanese culture in the Yasui Shihiri Yoho system that I practice is very important, because without that, we lose our identity.
Mm-hmm.
It is as myself, you know, I did not have the greatest of childhoods.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very grateful for what I experienced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if I had not, and I had not had the parents that I had, and I did not have the dynamic that I had, it would not have enabled me to evolve into the person that I'm becoming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think the Japanese piece in relationship to my practice is very significant.
Mm-hmm.
As the precepts themselves are,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that it enables us to come full circle.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a wonderful point. Well, I feel that the precepts are not just held in the Japanese culture, which I feel like is very important, but that culture somehow goes back, as all cultures do, to the very basic part of human culture. And it's and there is this piece about the monks that I thought of when you were saying something about receiving your money back and so on. And it's like, I feel the practice of Reiki also allows us to do this, that we, when we find a way to serve and it fills our soul, then there's nothing that can pay for that. And that, you know, what they want from you is to have gratitude and then maybe to pass it on.
To someone else. Exactly.
So it's so fascinating for me, this piece, and very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very beautiful story.
It is a constant evolving process.
Yes.
And it's a very circular process.
Right.
It just keeps going and going and going. And in the Western culture, we would say, you know, coarsely, what goes around comes around.
Right.
In a harder way. You know, that to me is very American, that term. But for folks who couldn't get it, that might be helpful for them to realize that it is an evolving, circular process, and that the more we give, the more we get back. And it may not be in a materialistic sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more we give, the more it comes back. And sometimes it is in the material side.
Right. But do you feel like there's a way of giving? Like, some people give, but there's an agenda behind it. And I'm wondering, does it matter if there's agenda or if it's simple giving?
My concept of that is your greater reward is in the simple giving, without an agenda, without expectation.
Right.
It's like going on a holiday and having a preconceived notion of where you're going to go, what you're going to do, how, you know, that whole agenda thing. I think you miss a lot by having an agenda. The openness and transparency allows us to receive.
Right.
More deeply.
More
so perhaps in the way that we need that we're totally unaware of.
Right.
We have to be more open. Trust and acceptance. Mm-hmm. As I say to my students all the time. Trust and acceptance.
There's that word acceptance again. Wonderful. Well, you know, it's very interesting because I feel like we've reached a place of depth with Earn Your Living Honestly that is very significant in this time because of this, what we call, what some people call the financial crisis of the world. I personally feel like it's a kind of reconciliation, and I feel like there'll be more reconciliation because we were so far, I mean, money is an illusion anyway, and our material world in some way is an illusion in the sense that we use it to prove ourselves valuable or we prove ourselves to be worthy or we prove who we are through our material world. And that's that concept is breaking down. So then we go back to this place with the monks where they know who where they're called to. They have their needs provided, which is not really what they want, but what they need. Well, maybe for them it's what they want and need both. But for us in the Western world, I think that we always get surprised at how little we need and how much we want.
Correct. And how we are able to adjust to our comfort level.
Yeah,
our comfort level, you know?
Totally.
Like myself giving up the job, you know, put me in a completely different structure.
Right.
And to say, whew, okay, what do I have now? All right, I can adjust to that. You know, moving to an island 2 miles long, half mile wide, you know, how much can you really bring with you? Not a lot.
Not a lot.
You know?
Not a lot of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that whole piece was totally amazing. But if we allow ourselves to be fluid, you know, and avail ourselves to move with the universe, not against it, you know, just to move with the spirit that's within us, if we allow it, it's amazing where we can find comfort.
Right.
Reassurance.
Right.
And peace.
Right. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, this is a great place to end because this is the end of the show.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Thank you. Jerry, thank you so much for being with us and for sharing your stories.
Thank you so very much, Phyllis. It's my blessing to have this wonderful conversation with you.
Yeah.
Thank you for making time for me.
Oh, you're welcome, and it's a blessing for me to receive it. Thank you. Well, listeners, I assume that it's also a blessing for you to share this time with Jerry and I. We hope that this will stimulate, I assume that I can speak for you too.
Yes, you can. Thank you very much.
Will stimulate you to think about earning your living and about whether you work to live or live to work. And be clear that you don't have to quit your job. You just have to change perspectives. And, you know, your Reiki treatments will help you. Your living with your other precepts will assist you. And just being you will assist you, knowing who you are. So this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.